This podcast is recommended for mature listeners and may contain descriptions of violence, thematic content, and immature language. Listener discretion is advised.
This podcast is mature listeners with Neil Jacoby and Shane Levy. Enjoy.
Hello and welcome to Mature Listeners.
Scratch the newest that. Episode of Dick Guy Before E, the show where we watch NWO sold out every week until the end of time. This week, we discuss the garbage trucks.
Oh, I can't believe Miss NWO.
I still can't get over it. We've seen this 472 times, and I still can't get over the end of the Miss NWO pageant.
Oh. What was the one good match on that show? I believe it was Jericho versus Chono.
I think so. I don't fucking remember. I try and block WCW out, honestly. And I've been watching like the last year of it, and it's just fucking bad, and it sucks, and I hate it.
Oh, well, Semper Fi.
Semper Posts. But that's not what we're here to talk about today.
Yeah, this is Mature Listeners. I'm Neil, here with the judge, Jesse.
That's me.
And we are here to talk about the fourth volume of Preacher. But first off, we got to talk about another gigantic nuclear explosion.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, the Something Awful Internet forums are completely on fire, and it's funny as fuck. And all of this could have been avoided at, like, a million points along the way if anybody had a fucking brain. And it's amazing.
So I have not been following this super closely. Could you give
so real quick, the best way to describe it, you ever see that one Akewood with little nephew with the jeans? He can't wear his jeans anymore, so he gets individual jeans for each leg, and Ray yells at him about how he's always doing the stupidest goddamn thing possible.
And then basically he gets mad ruddy with the truancy officer?
Yes, because her thong is poking up above her low-rise jeans. He's wearing a crown while he types this. Yeah, no. I've
thought about that Akewood more than multiple people in my family.
Yeah, no, it's definitely the mods doing the stupidest goddamn thing possible every goddamn second of the day. It's been fucking fantastic, really.
I'd say at least part of it is more like the one where little nephew takes a picture of Ray on the toilet and tries to blackmail him with it.
Yeah. Oh, when he's being Japan Man, when he's trying to blackmail Ray out of selling weed. Luffy sitting side saddle. Gong! Akewood was so good. They're going to be collecting that starting this summer, and I'm going to buy it all, because Akewood is fantastic.
Oh, hell yeah. But what's not fantastic is what's been happening to the Something Awful forums.
I don't know, I think it's fucking great. It's one of the funniest goddamn things I've ever seen in the history of the internet. So, I don't even know, because there's like a year's worth of bullshit. There have been recurring problems with one of the moderators, is the shortest way to say it. There's a bunch of problems, nothing's been addressed, everything keeps getting pushed under the rug. Finally came to a head after he probated me for a month for some reason that we don't understand, which got reversed in a day because everybody yelled at them until they fixed it. Then
is
more
this the,
yelling
C-SPAM
happened.
C-SPAM moderator?
No, D&D.
Ah.
I got banned in the center-right lib forum and not the... Or probated, rather, in the center-right forum as opposed to the leftist forum.
Is this the mod that everyone keeps calling a dengist?
No, that's a different guy. He does not... he does not post anymore. He self-banned because people kept calling him a genocide denier. Which he wasn't really denying genocide, but it's funnier that way, so we'll just go with it.
Denying genocide as a bit, parenthesis social experiment.
No, okay, so his real thing was that, like, it's very hard to trust any news about China because you either are getting it from China, which is not legit. You are getting it from, like, U.S. think tanks with names like the Forward Thinking Policy Initiative, or you're, you know, that are funded by the fucking State Department, or you're getting it from the expats who all have their own axes to grind. And, like, it's hard to know what's happening. And that was basically his argument. And then he's basically a genocide denier because it's funnier. But anyways, no, so there was more yelling about all of this. And then a couple of outspoken trans posters including myself, got permanently banned. And then more yelling happened. And then it came out that the guy was hanging out in Nazi discords. And then they claimed that it was because he was keeping tabs on them like a spy. One of the Nazis ended up posting in a thread about it saying like, oh, here's actually a graph of all your Discord activity. And actually, you're more active in my Nazi Discord than in any other Discord. So, like, what's up, buddy? How you doing? We knew you were a mod. Because he was also posting under the same name that he used in, like, an actual Something Awful Discord that was linked directly to his forums account. So, like, everybody knew who he was. And then he posted this giant, I'll have to try and find it and send it to you later. He posted this huge wall of text about his, you know, clandestine operations, like infiltrating the Nazis. And you're like, but then if you're doing all this, why aren't more Nazis being banned? What the fuck is up with all this, Brahim?
He tried to Kurt Eichenwald his way out of being called a Nazi.
Which Kurt Eichenwald? The hentai porn or...
I was just trying to show my family hentai, but also I was just buying child pornography as research.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. No, very much. And then it all blew up because, like, nobody else knew about it. And it's such an insane fucking mess. And everything everybody has said has been so said last night for, like, 3 hours. Was the most completely insane shit you have ever heard. It was genuinely one of the funniest things I've ever seen on the internet. Just the dumbest shit. Just nonstop. Everybody said the stupidest thing nonstop. It was beautiful. So now the forums are on fire and people are quitting and who knows what the fuck's gonna happen.
Well, that's the vibe check.
Yeah, vibe check. Internet on fire. Good news.
Well, actually, my vibe check is Wrestle Kingdom because it kicked ass.
Yeah, it's cool. Actually, I'm sorry. My other vibe check is I did set up a cool Discord server for the leftists from the forum, and I'm going to try and get forums poster Do Not Eat, aka the guy who made the YouTube videos about Grover House and Killdozer.
Nice.
Into my thing because I know him, and that would be cool.
I like that his voice is basically like Joe Pera, but slightly more Pennsylvanian.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I like that he talks about Syracuse, New York sometimes.
You know, sometimes I like to sit down in my bed late at night and open up one of my books of engineering disasters. Yep, it may be a little morbid, but it's a nice thing to read about. Because, you know, you gotta know about the problems before you can fix them.
Yeah, no, that's basically him.
Kermit I need to watch the Frog here to tell you about Grover House.
I need to watch the Grover House video because I fucking love Grover House, and I genuinely want to hear his insights into the nightmare that is Grover House.
Yeah, but speaking of nightmares, we're talking about Preacher.
This was good. I like this part of Preacher. Things happen in it.
Oh yeah, I know. It's just like a nuclear bomb gets dropped.
Oh, that's not a nightmare. That's cool.
It's probably a nightmare for the people in it. A nightmare for Star, who gets locked in a basement with a copy of Cheese Monthly incorporating...
What the fuck is
Sodomite that? Sodomite Quarterly?
I just had that page open. Hang on a minute. I'll find it. It's a fantastic fucking page. Scrolling back. Where is it? No, god damn it. I literally just had that page open and was looking at it because it's such a fucking weird page. Here we go. It is Cheese Monthly Incorporating Popular Sodomite. You know, like piss drinkers. When piss drinkers got bought up by corpse rapers.
That is
My grandfather.
That is such a great example of, like, Ennis humor done right, because so much of that gag is on the particular phrasing of popular sodomite.
We're praying popular sodomite. And then the picture is, like, a chunk of Swiss cheese sitting in a puddle. And it's all in black and white, so it looks like it's, like, a zine almost. There's a lot going on in that image that's just very, very well observed.
But yeah, that is Ennis humor done right. And what's your opinion on the whole arseface thing in this volume?
Which part of it? Because there's a couple different arseface things in this. There's the continuing story of arseface.
The continuing, like, music industry satire, which is why it was brought to mind with this bit about Ennis humor.
The music industry stuff is kind of boring and not great, but it works. A lot of the arseface stuff ends up working as part of a whole better than it does as pieces, because arseface is, like, the only character who just gets a happy ending. Like, there's no, like he just is a, like, super cheerful dude for the entirety of the main series. And nothing ever gets him down, no matter how bullshit it is. And then he gets a happy ending at the end.
Yeah, part of why it's pretty weird to read that nowadays is because, like, the idea of the charity single is not quite as...
Oh my god, yeah.
Like, the last big one was the Little Dicky one, and I can't really think of a big one Little comparable Dicky to that within the past, single? Like, 5 years. Yeah, it's about the environment, and it's got a bunch of celebrity cameos doing, like, one-known jokes. Like, Ariana Grande's a zebra, because we don't know if she's black or white.
No, Jesus Christ. Do you see it sometimes in punk? I want to say Jeff Rosenstock did one not too long ago, where he covered, like, Laura Stevenson songs, I think. I don't remember. I want to say there was one not very long ago that I like.
Right. But I mean, but they're not like culture-spanning single for charity.
Yeah, exactly. That doesn't...
Because
that's not
you
real.
Really don't see, like, big culture-spanning singles full stop, except in, like, the hyper-specific pop lane.
Yeah. But yeah, no, the music industry stuff, I mean, also, like, the fact that it happens on a record label and is about, like, the record executive taking advantage, like, that also hasn't aged super well in 2019 as, like, it becomes more decentralized. Like, Bandcamp is a thing now, and...
But you still have stuff like the whole Dr. Luke thing.
The what?
The Dr. Luke thing where...
Kesha? I have no idea. You're going to have to tell me. Neil, I haven't listened to a radio in, like, 15 years. I don't know who any of these people are.
You know what? I'll just send you a link to a story after we're done recording, because it is not super related to this and also comes with some pretty harsh trigger warnings about sexual assault.
I was going to say, is it worse than, like, every story I've ever heard about Victory Records? Yes, it is.
But nothing like that seems to be happening in this context. It's just this manager.
It just doesn't age well I think it's one of those, like, we're past that moment type things. But it's not bad. I like that all of Arseface's songs are just him singing other songs, and nobody can tell because it's Arseface, and nobody can fucking understand what he's saying.
I have to say, this did kind of, like, presage, like, a sort of William Hung thing, where you have, like, a sort of popular irony pop star is the best phrase I can use for it.
Do you know what vibe I got off of it, thinking about it now, is Wesley Willis. What? I got huge Wesley Willis energy off of it.
Yeah. Like if Wesley Willis was in a position to record a nuclear disaster charity single.
Are you saying Wesley Willis didn't record a nuclear disaster charity single? Because I guarantee you he did.
Well, he may have, but there was not a label to make that connection.
Fine.
Though, Arseface's single does get rejected by just about every charity it's offered to, so I guess that...
Rip Wesley Willis.
But yeah, the Arseface stuff is also kind of weird because it is juxtaposed with the one-shot about the history of Arseface.
Yeah!
Drawn by Richard Case.
Yeah!
Which...
Yeah! All of that stuff, like... And I think that's a result of it being collected in one volume instead of it being, like... Because I don't know... I would have to look up, like, the publication history and see when... those issues versus that one shot came out. Because I think part of it is we get all of the really wacky Arseface stuff, and then at the end, it's just like, also, here's the story about his failed suicide attempt.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's like watching Bob Roberts and a late 90s Harmony Korine movie starring Tim Robbins as Bob Roberts in, like, a double feature.
Yes, yes. It's just, it's fucking weird. And, like, that issue also hasn't aged super well because it's so specifically tied to the 90s. Also because we all know now that Kurt Cobain didn't kill himself.
Yep.
Yeah, no, like, it, I don't know. The Arseface stuff has
obviously
always been...
Prince Andrew killed Kurt Cobain.
Yeah, the Arseface stuff has always been super weird because it's not bad, and I understand why it's there, and I'm glad it's there, but also it doesn't work all that well. It's fucking weird.
In the 2020s,
yeah,
it
no,
does not.
It also works better when you're 14.
Yeah,
when you're almost 30, not so much. It definitely feels like I talked about in the first episode. I think like first big book syndrome, where he's just swinging for the fences because he doesn't know if he's getting another one, and he's just throwing everything he wants to do in there. This is...
Yeah, and also all these one-shots seem to be him, like, flexing different types of things that he wants to do. Like, he's got this big book, and he can do these side things where he can just, like...
Fuck around and do weird little stories about, like, here's a story about Cassidy being a vampire in Ireland. Here's a story.
Yeah, here's a story. In this one alone.
And it's an immigrant story, too, and then you get into, like, the fucking weird, like... slapstick comedy of the like the Jody and TC one, like
yeah
and then the fucking the Arseface one, which is a horrifyingly depressing story of child abuse, bookended by like wacky sunshiny Arseface stuff. It's such a fucking weird Garth Ennis in the 90s is a really weird thing that is very hard to pin down. Because then also at roughly the same time as this, he was doing fucking Hitman, and Hitman is an all-timer.
Yeah, like, I'd like to touch on that Jody one, because it is such a weird decision to make. Like, he gets Carlos Esquerra in, and he decides to make it like a... At least what I took from it was like a riff on old adventure comics.
Yep. That's very much the vibe. It is very, I don't want to say it's very 2080, but it's very, like early golden age adventure-y stuff.
Like, but like if like Flash Gordon was,
yes,
about...
it's very serials. It's the same DNA as Indiana Jones, except with like,
yeah. Like the cast of The Rocketeer just zapped into Deliverance.
Yes. Yes.
And I was so glad to see Carlos Esquerra back because he is so great at doing this sort of like weird action comics vibe, but also getting the like sort of messed up Preacher universe vibe in there.
You should read Stronium Dog because everything he drew for Stronium Dog is fucking incredible. Also, Stronium Dog is why it's canon that Hitler in the Judge Dredd timeline didn't actually die in the bunker. That was Hitler's body double. The real Adolf Hitler, whose real name is Adolf Schickelgruber, got kidnapped and brought to the future to stand trial for his crimes.
For more on that, see our last episode.
Fucking that book. I forgot I talked about that. That book is so fucking weird, though.
Yeah. Also fucking weird... the decision to have just a nuclear bomb go off in the southwestern United States.
I mean,
and
where
just,
else
like,
would
have to deal with that with the rest of the comic?
Where else would a nuke go off in America?
Fair enough.
Like, there's a lot of them out there, and also there's nothing out there. That's the place. If the nuke's got to go off, better go off out there.
But yeah, we talked last time about how after a certain point in the comic, it just sort of slows to a crawl and becomes more about character drama. And I expected that to be this volume. But this volume was like a gigantic set piece that I assume is leading to.
Yes. So this is the point where it stops. So because without getting too heavy into spoilers, the next volume is very much all that character stuff. The next volume is the Odin Quinn canon stuff. Just a lot of slowing it way the fuck down, and now we're going to just kind of talk about the nature of redemption for a while, and then we're going to do the hitchhiking issue, which is the best issue of the comic. And
you see the start of that, like, because right after, okay, quick recap, they meet the Santa Killers in the desert, try to make a deal with them. Hairstar is there with the United States Army because he is now in control of the Grail. Things go south. The Santa Killers takes on the entire United States Army and kills the shit out of all of them. And so they eventually call in a nuclear bomb. Hairstar survives. Jesse, he survives, but after he falls out of a plane because, like, Cassidy is holding onto his arm and he tells him with the word to let him go. And so Cassidy and Tulip are on their own.
And they think Jesse is dead because they saw him fall out of a fucking plane as a nuke went off.
Yeah, and this is where the Cassidy and Tulip story gets,
it's
dark.
Yes, it's... So you remember when I talked about when I said a minute ago about how, like, we're getting to the part where it becomes very much amusing on the nature of redemption and being a good person? That's very much where that goes, but it takes a minute to get there, and it gets dark first.
Yeah.
It gets way worse than it is in this one.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that I'm inferring things right. General trigger warning. Okay, so Cassidy and Tulip, they're on their own. Cassidy... Yep. They both think he's dead. Tulip is taking it much worse than Cassidy. Cassidy has not told her what Jesse told him before falling. Tulip is falling into, you know, alcoholism and pill abuse. And what I think happens is that Cassidy sexually assaults her while she's too intoxicated to...
Yes. Nope. That's pretty much it. In the 90s, like, it was definitely not something they thought of that way. What I think he was going for in that moment of the 90s is Cassidy is keeping her, and this is minor spoilers, like, it's very clear where this is going. Cassidy keeps her hooked on pills so that she's dependent on him because he's an abusive piece of shit. And that's where that goes for a while. But yeah, no, that's exactly what happens.
Okay, just wanted to make sure I got the right conclusion there.
Like I said, it gets really dark, and the whole... Preacher is a story about trying to be a good person, and sometimes it gets really fucking dark on the way.
So, we've already touched on this, but while this is happening, Hairstar is, the bunker of
a Hills Have Eyes fucking bunker.
Yeah. I forget the name of the family. It's a lame name. It's... The characterization of those brothers is, I would say, the low point of Ennis humor so far.
Yeah.
Because it is...
TC fucking the animals, though. That's my low point.
Fair. But also, like, this particular way, it's sort of the same general trend. Like, it's a very played out hillbilly stereotype that he's doing in the crassest way possible, and it is groan worthy.
It's also just Ennis also being like, oh, what if I did a Sonny Bean story real quick? And it's just kind of a B plot, and it doesn't really amount to anything. It's just more of Airstar being shit on.
I'm sorry, could you... A what story?
Sonny Bean. It's the family that it's a story about a cannibal family. It's what Texas Chainsaw is based on.
Okay. Okay.
I'm going to make sure I said that. Yeah. Sonny Bean, Sonny Bean was said to be the head of a 45-member clan in Scotland in the 16th century who were reportedly executed for the mass murder and cannibalization of over 1,000 people. Basically, every time you get, like, the weird incestuous cannibal hillbillies, you're pulling on that story.
Free display name, Sonny Small Bean.
God fucking damn it, Neil. God damn it. Why do I do this show? Damn it. But no, it's Ennis doing it while going, oh, I'm just going to do this, but also it's going to be a fucking just weird story and nothing really matters in it. But also you just get some really good, like, comedic timing when he escapes and he's just hopping on one leg and it's just, and he falls over and, like, it's just that for, like, four panels. Like, that's fucking fantastic. The timing on that is really good. Because you just keep seeing the sound effect, and then it cuts to him just wiping the fuck out and getting back up.
Yeah, there's that, the aforementioned popular sodomite, and the bit where he finally shoots all of them, and all of them have landed on him, and it's just a wide shot of him with all of these corpses on top of him, and it's...
Yeah.
Such a funny little button on the scene. And, like, that seems to be the experience of reading Ennis so far. You are frustrated on the one hand, but you have to admit that there's a lot of good structure there on the other.
This
and you
is
have
also,
to take them both together.
This is also really early Ennis when he was figuring out his own thing. By the time you get to, like, the modern age, like, you get the two extremes of Ennis's style in Punisher Max and The Boys, and there are no parts of Punisher Max that I'm remotely, like, down on at all. Like, there's no moment like this where I'm like, did you have to, Garth? Did you really? There's no arseface moment where I'm like, this just doesn't work. This hasn't aged well. The Boys has a lot of things where I'm like, I kind of tug at my collar, but also I get exactly why he was doing them. I just wish they weren't done in that way.
Yeah, it's like watching Okada in, like, 2012, where not everything's figured out yet, but there's a lot of fundamentals there.
Yes. Yes.
And then Punisher Max would be, like, 2015 Okada.
Yes. Punisher Max is the time Kota Ibushi did the moonsault off the balcony. It's just really good, and every time you're like, shit, that was fucking insane, every single time you read it. That's my wrestling take. Which Garth Ennis book is Triple H? Probably Preacher, honestly. Been around, everybody knows what it is, really not that great. Whoa!
Do you think Triple H is Red Crossed?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. But you know what I want to read after we get done with Preacher, because it's actually really good and I want to reread it, is...
Hitman?
Well, that, yes, I always want to reread Hitman. I've just reread that, like, a month ago. No, have you ever read Chew?
I read, like, the first few volumes of Chew.
Stick it out. So, here's what I'll say about Chew. Chew is a book that, when you just read the beginning of it, it just feels, like, way too cute. But as you get going, you start to realize that actually this book is, like, wildly meticulously plotted. They do a lot with timing, like, comedic and dramatic. Like, they do a lot with repeating imagery to just convey, like, entire scenes in one panel. There's an issue that was released early, so, like, it was like issue 28 was released in the middle of the previous arc, and then when you and it's about the stuff that happens after that, but you don't know what they're talking about, and then when it got to that point again, they re-released it, and all of a sudden it all makes sense. But also, it made total sense on its own. Like, you could still follow what was going on in that issue in a vacuum. You just didn't know what happened before. It's, again, like, it is an incredibly, it is the only book that I've ever read where they gave away the ending, like, halfway through the book. They keep doing this bit about, like, in the future, and then cutting to the future, and the thing is happening, and you, every time they do it, it's just another panel added on to the sequence, and you slowly realize that, like, this is actually how the book ends, and then you get to the end of the book, and that's literally the ending, and it's still fucking incredible.
Oh, wow.
Chew is a really weird, weird book that, like, if you are interested in books with incredible comedic timing, that's it. That's the one to read.
Bringing that up reminds me of, like, something I'd like to vibe check, which is that I recently rewatched the first season of Pushing Daisies.
I've never watched Pushing Daisies.
It is really good. The pilot episode is directed by Barry Sonnenfeld.
Which one is Pushing Daisies? You have to remind me.
That's the one with Lee Pace as a pie maker who can bring people back to life.
Oh, right. Got it.
And, like, this is 100%, like, Adam's Family values Barry Sonnenfeld, and it is a perfect fit. Like, it has the same, like, great tonal mix as those movies.
Okay. Alright.
You've seen the 90s Adam's Family movies, right?
A very long time ago.
Well, okay. But yeah, Chew sort of struck me as, like, my early opinion of Chew, which is, like, the only opinion I've had time to form since I only read, like, a little bit of it, was sort of like that. It's like a sort of cute but morbid comic that, if the tonal balance was wrong, could be, like, late period Tim Burton, but thankfully it isn't.
Yeah, it's, the first time I read it, I got, like, I don't know, like, 20 issues in, I was like, ah, it's alright, but it's very cute, and it's, like, a little too cute, it's almost twee, and, like, deliberately so, and I don't like that. And then I picked it up towards, as it was getting closer to the end, and I read the entire thing in a shock because we had it all on the shelves at work. And I was like, oh, no, this book's actually fucking amazing. There's an entire arc where the climax is his girlfriend's crazy ex wants to write a book about the sex lives of famous baseball players. So he digs up their bodies and feeds them to Tony. And Tony just starts making shit up. But really, he's absorbing their baseball skills, and he ends up just, like, smashing this dude's fucking head in. Oh, also, one of them was, like, an amateur escapologist, so, like, he learned how to get out of the ropes and, like, the handcuffs because that guy learned how to do it. And it's just fucking goofy. But then there's a payoff later on where, like, so, like, he learns to be, basically is the world's best pitcher as a result. There's a bit later on where, like, they drop him on an island with a secret weapon that he thinks is one thing, and when he opens up, it's just a pile of baseballs, and the person he's with is like, ah, oh, fuck, ah, oh, shit, we're fucked, it's just fucking baseballs, fuck, and he just starts murdering people with baseballs because he's the world's greatest pitcher. It's a weird fucking book. I love it so much.
Oh my god. I had no idea it became, like, a JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 6 puzzle fight manga.
Oh, no, no. It's not very puzzle fighty, but it's definitely got weird food-based powers. It's just a really weird fucking book, is the only way to describe Chew. Pro read. Also, a lot of weird Robert Kirkman jokes in it. I think Kirkman
pro
got...
Pro or anti?
I think Kirkman got them their started image. So there's just a lot of, like, if you notice, like, in the background of his daughter's room, she has a poster of Robert Kirkman. And, like, there's, like, at one point someone has a little tiny stuffed Robert Kirkman, and, like, little things like that, that if you don't know what they are, it's just there. Like every other background joke in Chew. But also, if you're paying attention, there's a lot of really funny shit in that book. Also, like, a dozen art issues where people are just tripping balls on acid, basically, but also it's from licking a frog.
Wow.
Read Chew, everybody. It's fucking great. I love it.
All right, then. Okay, so
where were we? I don't know. We were talking about
Preacher. Talked about him and the Santa Killers meeting in the desert, Jesse telling the Santa Killers, hey, God killed your family on purpose.
God set this up because he needed you to be you. Which is...
The game was rigged from the start.
Which is fucking dark. And, like, I get it. But it's also, it feels like more of, like, Preacher being edgy. And, like, I don't care about that. But also...
A little bit, like, unnecessarily... I'm not quite sure what the right word is here.
It feels like it's too much. Like, you don't need to make the saint's existence be because God let his family die and do that whole, like, connecting it to just the uncaring God. You should just be like, yeah, his family died and he's just fucking pissed and he just wants to be dead and he can't be dead because God keeps making him go kill people. Like, you could just do that. That would be fine. And it doesn't feel like some shit an edgy teenager wrote in 1994.
Okay, so I think I understand what you're saying here, and, like, I think the difference between what you're proposing and what the comic actually does is your version is more, like, is less actively malicious, like, this happened and God used it because he didn't care.
Yes.
Whereas the comic version is this happened and God did it because he doesn't care enough to... He is actively making the decision to disregard this person's happiness and their family.
Which is also, like, an issue I have with the book in general. Like, that whole portrayal of God as just a fucking dickhead is very, like, 90s. It's the prototype for r/atheism. Like, that's what this book is. This book, Garth Ennis went back in time after becoming an r/atheism poster and wrote this shit up. And yeah,
if God is all good and God is all powerful, then why don't I have a girlfriend?
Because you wear sweatpants. It's a Steinway song. No, I don't know. Like, there's a lot of parts of Preacher that I like, but the whole, like, I'm gonna kick God in the dick because he's an asshole bit, I could read something else. Why don't I just go read something else where nobody kicks God in the dick for being an asshole? I don't know. This is the part of the whole, like, I like Preacher when it's not doing the plot. This is Preacher doing the plot, and I don't care in the slightest. I do like that the Saint's only response to being literally nuked is not enough gun. Like, that's fucking chilling. Like, oh, we literally can't get rid of this fucking guy. Whoops. Also, correct me if I'm wrong, because I read this really quickly this weekend as a refresher. This is also the part where he makes the deal with the Saint to get God in a place where the Saint can kill him?
No, I don't think he makes a deal with the Saint because the Saint, you know, walks away, Jesse tries to talk to him, and the Saint just decks him.
Yes, okay, that's right, I remember now. Yeah, that comes later. Got it.
Yeah, so, if I understand you correctly, like, when it's doing the plot, it's too much dogma? Like the Kevin Smith movie? Well, the Kevin Smith movie /JRPG.
Yes. Yes, no, I know what you're talking about. The plot of Preacher is very 90s edgy, like, atheist. Like, yeah, I said God's a fucking asshole. Blah, angels doing cocaine. Actually, the angels doing cocaine, I love that part. That's not the point. Point is, it doesn't...
That's like stuff the atheist version of the Marine Todd post.
Yeah, that stuff doesn't work as well for me as, like, all the stuff he does when he's not doing the plot, like just, you know, 3 pages of Jesse and Tulip talking about how Jesse eats pussy and most men don't. Like, that's a great fucking scene. Like, and it adds nothing to the story. It is entirely just a weird little character beat. It's good. And it, in a way, it actually works because it's establishing Jesse's, like, ability to care for other people despite the fact that he's this weirdly stoic, like, cowboy.
Hey Siri, Jesse Custer, Danny Brown, I Will AMV.
Oh, God, Jesus Christ. I love that bit also because now it makes me think of the episode of Sopranos where Tony finds out that Junior eats pussy and just makes fun of him.
Oh, God.
Singing Moon Over Miami. That episode's so fucking good. Just dunking on Junior for eating pussy. But the stuff like that is great. I love everything that's coming up in the next volume where, like, there's no plot development. It's just, like, here's a story that happens in between these parts of the story. That's, like, my favorite part of the book. Just these weird little... And then when Jesse, like, spoilers, they all meet back up eventually. Like, the issue where Jesse and Tulip are reunited is super sweet. Again, does it add anything to the plot, to the overall, like, I'm going to find God and make him answer for what he's done story? No, not in the slightest. That's why it's good.
Yeah, the turn towards just character and relationship drama happens, like, right after the bomb drops, which is... An interesting way to switch paths.
So the theory that I've heard that I tend to believe is that he was told when he started this that he had X number of issues, probably in the 30s ish. And he, that's why when you read those first, like, two or three, the first, like, two of the bigger volumes, he's just sprinting through plot because he's trying to get through it all before the book ends. And then he slows down a little bit, and then you hit the climax. Like, the bomb is very clearly supposed to be, like, the move into the third arc, or into the third act, rather. And instead, I think that was the moment he found out they were just going to be like, yeah, just go do whatever, man. Just take your time. This book's selling like a fuckload. Just go. It's fine. It's good. Whatever. And because that is the exact second that book just smashes its brakes into the fucking ground.
Yeah, and I think, like, the first place that I realized, okay, I think this is where we're moving into the long haul of just character stuff, is where he meets the guy in the desert who's written "fuck you" into the ground.
Yeah, yeah. So that the astronauts can see it from space.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy rules. I love that guy.
It's such a perfect little, like, short story idea that he decided to just, like, put in here.
Yep. The entire story about Jesse and Odin Queen Cannon and all that is very much just, like, I had this idea for, like, a quick story, and it kind of fits in here. I can make this fit. Let's do that. It works really well, too. Yeah.
Like, I could see, like, A24 releasing a movie that is just that little guy's story.
I would say just, like, a little character drama about this dude and his dream of writing "fuck you" in the ground so big that astronauts can see it from orbit.
Yeah, just a lot of, like, big wide shots of the desert and him, like, digging.
It's got serious pushing the wheelbarrow in Lighthouse in my head. Like, him just pushing that wheelbarrow up to him. What?
I still have not seen that.
Oh, dude, you gotta get on that. That movie is... I haven't seen The Vivitch, but The Lighthouse is buck wild. It is a fart comedy. It is gay as hell. It's fucking weird.
It's like the one big recent A24 joint that has not played here. Like, I was able to see Uncut Gems on Christmas Day.
Nice. I want to see that.
I was able to
still
see The Lighthouse. I was able to see The Farewell and Midsummer, but this just did not play.
Yeah, I really want to see Uncut Gems, because everybody is saying that it's weirdly good and that Adam Sandler is good in it, and I am very confused by that idea.
It is very much like a Punch Drunk Love thing.
Okay.
Where,
in,
like,
a good way or a bad way?
Punch Drunk Love rules.
Okay, I've never seen Punch Drunk Love.
Punch Drunk Love is, like, Paul Thomas Anderson taking Adam Sandler's, like, usual energy and sort of channeling it into, like, a dramedy about, like, a fucked up guy who can't relate to other people instead of a broad comedy.
Okay.
And this, there's this,
like,
great,
like,
episode of the A20.
Like, a realistic take on a Adam Sandler character?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, I'm down with that. I like that.
And, like, There's this great episode of the A24 podcast with Paul Thomas Anderson and the Safdies talking about, like, what they see in Adam Sandler as an actor. And, it's like an hour-long podcast. I can't really encapsulate it all. But there is this great story that Paul Thomas Anderson tells about him visiting the set of Little Nicky because, like, he had the idea for Punch Drunk Love in his head, and Quentin Tarantino was also there because, like, he was writing the Inglourious Bastards script.
What?
And he was going to have Adam Sandler play the Eli Roth role.
Oh my god, I was just going to ask where he is in that, and I'm so fucking confused right now.
And there's, like, a deepfake out there of, like, Adam Sandler put onto Eli Roth's face in the introduction scene where he's walking down out of the tunnel with the baseball bat.
Oh my god, that's just... What?
But yeah, my favorite moment in it is, like, the Safdies are asking, is Punch Drunk Love the first movie that anyone ever saw Adam Sandler's face shot with an anamorphic lens? And then they all are like, was Airheads shot in anamorphic? And just, like, the idea of that question being asked is just beautiful.
Yeah, I don't know, I haven't seen that. The only time I've seen Adam Sandler do serious was Spanglish.
You haven't seen the 9/11 movie where he plays Shadow of the Colossus
seen the movie about his family being brutally owned by Muhammad Atta on 9/11.
They died in the freaking towers!
My family got freaking owned on 9/11. I have not seen Rain Over Me. I know somebody who watched that movie recently, and they said it was even worse than you could imagine.
If you can see Uncut Gems by the next episode, you should, because Shane has seen it. Okay, then.
Unless I can track it down somewhere, which is, you know, possible.
Wink, wink, nudge.
Yeah, I'm doing some research while we're talking. But yeah, I would really like to see it. When my partner and I went to see The Lighthouse, they played the trailer for Uncut Gems like 3 times, and every time we were like, what the fuck is this movie? What? Is that Adam Sandler, isn't it? Oh my god, what the fuck is this movie?
You're gonna fucking love this movie, KG.
I really want to see it. Oh, and there's a web screener already out. Sold. I will watch that by the next episode.
So next episode, it's the Sandcast with me, Shane, and Jesse talking about Uncut Gems.
Next episode, we just talk about Uncut Gems, and at the end we're like, yeah, Preacher was fine, I guess.
I'm trying to think of, like, what we haven't touched on, because we touched on the confrontation with the Santa Killers. The entire set piece fight between the army... Oh, right, Hairstar and the army general, like, that confrontation...
You know what we didn't touch on, actually, that I do want to talk about, is we didn't touch on the Hairstar origin issue.
Right, that too.
That issue is really fucking good. Like, and yeah, I don't ever like, and this is the villain's backstory. It works because at no point Star's just a fucking piece of shit, like, the entire time. They even set up that you're supposed to think he's better than he is, and then hard swerve it at the end and is like, I'll do that shit all fucking day. I don't care. So
and
good.
Like, it is no jokes, no shtick.
There are jokes in there. There's the him trying to fuck, and like, there's definitely jokes in that bit.
Right, but not to the level of like,
right, it's not
most Hairstar stuff in the main series.
Right, it's not full Garth Ennis.
Right.
I really like that because it gives us just enough backstory on the Grail also, and like how the Grail went from the Grail to where it is now, and to Star being in power.
it does a lot more to set up why he was so fucking terrified of the Allfather when they were in France than the actual arc itself did. Because you get that great scene where he just, like, he knows this one fucking horrifying story from Star's childhood about how why his eye is fucked up that nobody knows. How does that dude know it? And it's never explained. He just, I know that. That's my job. I know everything. Fuck you. So good.
You get more build and, like, nuance to the Grail and that entire power structure in one issue than you really do in, like, the entire rest of the comic.
Yeah, no, you do. Well, because you only see the Grail as an organization in the one arc, really. Because after that, the entirety of the Grail is Star and Featherstone and the guy who's counting grains of sand, and then the Samson units who just get fucking murdered. But the Grail as an organization really only exists in one arc and then a flashback issue.
And that entire arc is, like, in the story mode that you mentioned earlier, where it's very, like, Kevin Smith's dogma for the PlayStation 1.
Yes, well, and like, it's very much in the we have to get our plot beats in right now.
Yeah, so it's operating at, like, full shtick, and then to have that just all that, like, that high shtick tone completely ripped away for, like, this darker, more character-grounded single issue, it shows a lot of, like, what Ennis can do and in what situations he applies that skill.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
After Volume 3, this was a really good volume for guest art.
Yes.
Because you had Carlos Esquero, who is phenomenal.
Goat. Absolute fucking goat.
Richard Case, who mainly known for his work with Grant Morrison on Doom Patrol.
Yes.
Who actually really works very well in this sort of, like, grounded, like, kitchen sink drama vein that he's doing in this Arsface origin issue.
Yeah.
And then you have Peter Schneeberg. I cannot pronounce that guy's name, who I mainly know as, like, the guy who took over Starman after Tony Harris decided he'd had enough of tracing and decided to just jet on out of there.
Yeah, see, I would never have picked up on that. I've never read Starman because I can't read James Robinson because I like pictures with my words. I like when visual storytelling is visual and not just written.
See, I would say, like, the weak part of Starman is Tony Harris.
I mean, it's also a general problem I have with James Robinson, where everything he writes is super wordy and gets in the way of itself. He has a very hard time letting art do art.
That is fair.
Yeah.
It is the comic that people say is the good James Robinson comic, and, like, that is technically true, but low bar.
Yeah.
I read the entirety of that comic, and I'm not sure if it fits the guidelines for this podcast, and we may have to read it. Well, I may have to read it.
Okay, there we go. I'm like, do you read it, Neil? Or yeah, do you yeah, have like, to read it?
Yeah, you have not become third Mike just yet.
Yeah, no, I will tap out on that one. There's a few books that I just will just not read. I do want to do Fables just so I can be really angry.
Yeah, Fables is like the one, like, I know I'm going to have to do it, and it is so long that it is like a big, like, project series.
So I think the way you do Fables, not to totally get off topic for this podcast, which I know we never do, I think the way to do Fables is you structure it as two pieces. You structure it as the stuff before the story ends, and then and then the part that is everything else after that. So, like, you do... How much about Fables do you know?
I'm trying to think of, like, how many volumes I read. Okay,
so without spoiling anything, so the you know that the gist of Fables is that they are on the run because of the adversary,
they've escaped, they've set up their new home in this one block of New York, blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
Okay, so there is a point where that story about the adversary gets resolved, and I remember reading that going, there's another issue next month. What the fuck? Where are they going? How do you keep this book going after that? And the answer is, you don't. You fucking don't. You let it die. It's over.
Can't wait to read a comic about the Jewish diaspora written by a Goyish Republican.
I did. Oh, my God. Fun fact, for a very long time, if you Googled Fables Israel, like, the top result was me screaming about it on Penny Arcade. Because that scene pisses me off so fucking bad. Fuck you, little Israel. You fucking asshole. Yeah, no, that... There is a very sharp decline in terms of even the plotting. Because the reveal of who the adversary is, and there's some stuff happening in there that's really good, and then everything after that is so completely unnecessary that you just hate it, and it ruins the rest of the book.
Oof. Yeah.
I mean, not that the rest of the book was great, because there's a lot of, like, you know, Bill Willingham in that book. And now he's got a new one that he's working on that sounds like basically Fables again, because he's got thing that he knows. Yeah, except it's with gods, I think. I don't know. Who cares? It's not going to be good.
Okay. Wasn't that already a comic? Like, I think it was called Greek Street?
No.
It was just, like, a neighborhood with the Greek gods?
Yeah, Greek Street was weird because it was, like, a retelling of, like, a Greek tragedy, but also, like, the characters were the characters. Greek Street was really fucking weird. It's not a bad book, but it's not a great book. Yeah, that...
Oh, Peter Milligan, yeah. Peter Milligan is exactly like a late period Peter Milligan comic.
Peter Milligan, super hit or miss. Who knew? And I only remember that book because it started coming out at roughly the same time as The Unwritten, which I have not finished because there's a crossover with Fables that I would rather gouge my eyes out with a fucking spoon than read. But I fucking love the first half of The Unwritten. First half of Unwritten is fantastic.
Yeah, The Unwritten was a really great example of a certain phenomenon from my childhood where, like, the library would have, like, volumes one through something of a given story and not the rest. And so I just got to the end and never got around to finishing the rest.
How The Unwritten goes. You should also check out The Dollhouse Family, also by Mike Carey. It's new. It's one of the new Hill House books, which is Joe Hill's, like, pop-up imprint, kind of like Young Animal, but for horror stuff specifically. The Joe Hill book that's launched it is, all right, it's okay so far. Like, it feels like sometimes the weakest...
Speaking of Joe Hill, like, Lock and Key was another comic that I started.
And I never finished
it. The library didn't have all of it.
Yup. Same OP.
And in that case, it's because it started to suck after, like, volume 3?
Yep. From what I've heard, if you stick it out, it gets really good by the ending. It's that he gets to a point where he's just got to get all the pieces in play, and then it gets weird, and then it wraps itself up. But you still have to sit through, like, the rough part of that book to get there. And who wants to do that?
Yeah.
I've noticed a thing with Joe Hill is that his weakest slash also best stuff somehow is when he is just very much riffing on, like, his dad's style. And Basketful of Heads feels like a Stephen King story. In a good way?
Huh.
Yeah. There's a third one that's out that I don't think I've read yet, but I dig Dollhouse Family, and Basketball Heads is good enough. Like, it's a solid little horror book. It's no Immortal Hulk, but what is?
Mortal Basketball Hulk. Heads, what is that about me when a Clippers game is on?
Good night, folks!
Yeah, I think we've covered everything in this volume of Preacher.
Yeah, I think so.
Except, like, that particular confrontation with the military leader. Oh. Which is a very Ennis interaction.
Oh, where he starts yelling at Star, and Star is just like, actually, you're just going to shut the fuck up and do what I fucking tell you if you ever want it further, because he thinks that everybody has his naked ambition, and the guy goes, yeah, I don't give a fuck. I will not eat enough shit and kiss enough ass to go further, and I am fine with it. Fuck you. I will destroy you. And, like, Star gets shook.
Yeah, that's
really fucking good. Ennis is really good at doing scenes where, like, somebody thinks they're the big dog and they are not, and that's one of them.
Yeah. There's also that section where Star gets back, and he is just super matter-of-fact
about everything, like, that's happened to him and how he's been kidnapped by cannibals and he's missing a leg and his head looks like a dick, and...
Yeah, yeah, and his second-in-command is just like, it is you! I love that little comedic beat.
Of her just, yup. Yeah, Featherstone is just a weird fucking character. I don't like Featherstone. She's very one-note, and the note's old. The better one is the other Grail agent, the one that Jesse told to count a million grains of sand. That dude rules. That dude shows
from
up.
From that, I assume we're... Oh, yeah, yeah. I was just about to say, from that, I assume we're going to see him again, but... Yeah.
No, he shows back up, like, and it's really good. Because that dude is broken. Because that's what happens when you're forced to count a million grains of sand.
All right, so I think we've covered just about everything except, like, a panel-by-panel description of the final beat of the issue that it ends on, with him seeing Cassidy and Tulip and just falling down in the street because he's so shocked.
Yes, yep. And then just moving on and leaving because he figures that this is the good thing and that they think he's dead and have moved on and are happy. It's weird. Yeah, yeah, it ends up paying off.
So next time on Mature Listeners, more character work and
a
more Cassidy Tulip storyline.
And a Pogues reference.
Oh.
Yep, that happens. It's a good one. I like it.
All right, so can we find you on the internet now?
I guess. Right now I'm on Twitter at MayorDaveMC1. That's where to find me right now. I'll probably change in a week. Who fucking knows?
All right. And you can find me at FUCKINALPAMARE. You can find my music, including my latest album, Crazy Rose, at neiljacoby.bandcamp.com. And until next time, Tailwinds.
Bye.
I'm sick of niggas trying to break. sun won't stop to shine. And I'm grime. Did anybody need a top 10 by 9? My knees look like a postman. I deliver. I'm the letter with the anthrax in it. Ass that hit it. Snip it. Snout it. We gon' take a pop shout it. I take a number cause I'm serving the jump. So wanna drop up and get me down. I'm brand new again. Brand new again. Never be old. When I was little boy, they said I had an old soul. Old gold. Fly with the clips on the host road. Now that's slow code. And you're local. And I'm global. That means worldwide. Like a rise of time. Gonna subside and rise. A good like clockwork. T-bone. Wanna show you how the clock works. Non-violent. No violence. Just style and hope. From the birthplace of MLK, where everything ain't okay, but KKK, I'm more Malcolm than Martin. Come get some, be a target. Standing in the kitchen with the AK, AK, AK.
The streets fall down, they need to wind up again. Find the rhythm of
Oh.